Okay, folks, we're all set to get ourselves underway here now in lesson number 4 in our series of studies on the New Covenant, Communion, and the Dispensation of Grace in which we live today. Take your Bibles with me right now, if you will. Turn to Exodus chapter 16, and we'll pick it up where we left off at the end of lesson number 3. We are right now dealing once again with the necessary background information regarding the education God gave Israel in His Jehovahness and grace, so we can understand what took place when they signed the law contract as described in Exodus chapter 19 and following there. And once again, the issue in God's Jehovahness and grace, as we saw in our last lesson, is the fact, especially when you're dealing with that aspect of His Jehovahness involved in the short and abbreviated form, I am blank. God educates Israel in their absolute need for Him to be for them various things before they can ever be made fit to be utilized by Him in His plan and purpose. God educates Israel by proving what's in their hearts, that they are not naturally fit, and they have a natural spiritual unfitness to go into that land that God promised Abraham and his seed and function as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. They have a natural spiritual unfitness when it comes to being a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. They need God to do things for them on the basis of His grace and to make them, by His Jehovahness, doing the things for them, remedying their problems, taking care of the things that are making them spiritually unfit. They need Him to do those things for Him on the basis of His own performance. Their own performance can't merit it. On the basis of His own performance, doing the work for them and giving it to them by His grace, thereby making them spiritually fit to be utilized by Him in His plan and purpose. The fundamental foundational trial for their education that sets all that education in motion, we saw last time in the latter part of Exodus chapter 15 here at the waters of Marah. There God made a statute, ordinance, and there He proved them, and there He set before them the fundamental being dealt with by Him on the base of their performance, which they thought by nature, because of who they thought they were by nature, they would be able to do. But He begins a proving process once again that really is designed to manifest them that they're no different from those Egyptians when it comes to spiritual unfitness. They got the exact same daddy those Egyptians had. When you trace it all the way back to Adam, they may be children of Abraham once again. They may think we're not sinners of the Gentiles, but they are equal to them. Same spiritual unfitness. And they need once again to understand and appreciate that. And this education, before they get to Mount Sinai, educates them in the reality of that. But the issue, once again, is when they get to Mount Sinai, they've got the education in God's Jehovah's and grace on this hand. They've got that law contract now that they've been aware of how it operates and everything on the other hand. And the issue is, which one are you going to choose, Israel? And they opt for that law contract. And as we talked about last time, and we'll see briefly when we get there, God's whole demeanor changes from the moment they do that. Because they spurn and reject Jehovahness and grace. And now they're going to be dealt with on the basis of their merit. And it's going to be them and their merit that stands before His holiness, His righteousness, and His justice. And He threatens them with a death penalty. The moment they say all the things the Lord has spoken we will do, the next words out of God's mouth to them as a people is, if you come near me, I'll kill you. And it's probably at that point that they wondered, what in the world have we done? But they should have thought about that before they signed that law contract or agreed to it. Anyway, there are a whole bunch of matters, folks, that could be examined as this fascinating details in connection with the way in which God goes about educating them and everything that are just a joy to see and understand and appreciate. This is a quick synopsis, though, once again, we're doing. I've told you already about other video series we have that go into this in much more detail and encourage you to get them and understand, appreciate them all that much more. But remember, the reason why we're doing all this is so you understand what the law contract contracted for. And until you understand what the law contract contracted for, there's no way you can understand appropriately and properly what the new covenant covenant's for, because it replaces, once again, the old covenant, and it provides what the old covenant could not provide for them. It provides it by the implementation of God's Jehovahness and grace. It gives, by grace, the spiritual fitness that Israel needs and that you and I in this dispensation of grace need as well. anyway. You're here in Exodus chapter 16 here. I told you there are five trials that Israel's education in this issue of God's Jehovahness and grace. The second, all we're going to do is just note them right now once again and just point out a couple of highlight matters. We pretty much said what needed to be said as far as a foundational understanding goes at the end of our last lesson regarding the issue at the waters of Marah there. That's the first trial. Exodus chapter 15, verses 22 and down through verse 26. The next one is Exodus chapter 16, verse 1, and really running down through the balance of the entire chapter here. But I want you just to take a note here once again that they murmur. It says there, verse 22, the whole congregation of the tribe of, the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. By the way, just think for a moment. Is that the natural equipment and provision and ability to function as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation? See, that's what's being put on display. That's what Israel's being educated in. And really, when you examine each one of the trials, it's not that each one of the trials is repeating the same. Each one of the trials is dealing with an issue that manifests all that much more the natural spiritual unfitness. But there's a whole bunch of components that go to that, as we talked about last time. You go over to Deuteronomy there, and you see Moses reflect back and everything. He puts the whole package together, and as I said, when the whole package is put together, the label that's written on the thing is Israel's natural spiritual unfitness. But there's a whole bunch of components to it. And the design and purpose behind that is so that an Israelite can't come along and say, well, we did fail over here, but weren't we pretty good in this? And no. In every area necessary, in every area that has a spiritual component of fitness necessary to be that kingdom, priest, and holy nation, God manifest through Israel, you failed. You didn't possess it. You don't have it by nature. You need me to provide for overcoming that natural unfitness and to give you the fitness by my grace. Well, here in the second trial in particular, look down to verse 6 and verse 7. It says, and Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel at even, then you shall know that the Lord hath brought you out from the land. Then you're going to know. They're even getting the idea once again, as it's evident when they come along, when they murmur against the Lord by murmuring against Moses and Aaron, as it says here and everything. And as Moses points out to them, your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. And they come down, is the Lord among us or not? All that kind of stuff. And they put on display the absolute, that complaint and rebellion is in their nature. By nature, they are complaining, rebellious people. They got the same kind of rebelliousness against something God says that any old natural man has. It's kind of significant that they're in the wills of sin. Because that's what's put on display. That's what rules in their heart. Just like it does in any old unjustified, unsanctified individual. In connection with this rather lengthy second trial for their education, God brings up the issue of the performance system again, and he sets it forth in connection with how you're going to gather the manna. And you can go through the details and all that and everything like that. But look at, I'll pick it up in verse 22, Exodus 16, verse 22. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man. All the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. He said unto them, this is that which the Lord hath said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which ye shall bake today, and seethe that which ye shall seethe. And that which remaineth over, lay it for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid up until the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is the Sabbath unto the Lord, today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. Verse 27, it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And look at verse, a violation of the command. God had given a command once again. Verse 28, and the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye, not the Moses in particular, ye, you people, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place, let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. So, verse 20, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments? See, that's what he put on display. The first trial was designed to prove for you, making the statute and the ordinance and everything, if you will diligently obey in everything, you think you can. Second trial puts on display that you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws. The education, the result of the education is obvious. Hey, we can't by nature keep it. There must be something fundamentally wrong with us. And the issue is, how long refuse ye? It's within them, and there's a refusal. There's something within that makes them refuse. They don't have a nature which is naturally godly, naturally holy, naturally right. And so they possessed a nature just like Adam possessed after he sinned. Once again, what this education is doing is educating them in their spiritual unfitness. Now, like I indicated to you at the end of the last lesson, their spiritual unfitness, everything that's described in connection with it, it's a package of spiritual unfitness. Five trials, once again, put it on display. Moses, when he recounts it all, and it lists various things about it and everything there in Deuteronomy, but it can all be boiled down to two major categories, which we'll start to deal with when we look especially at the law contract. Because the law contract comes along and says, all right, you want to do it by your own works? Here are the two things you've got to obtain. Well, a lot more time, like I said, could be spent on this, and you got the opportunity through other means to do that very thing and to further appreciate, but you got the gist, and that's what I'm after right now, that everything we've been saying. Let's just give you the rest of the references here. The third trial for their education begins in verse 1 of chapter 17 and runs down through verse 7. This is especially where they say, is the Lord among us or not? And the fourth trial for their education, it begins in verse 8 of chapter 17 with Amalek coming out and running down through the end of chapter verse 16. By the way, if you look at verse 15 here, you'll notice that Moses is utilized by God to put another one of those Jehovah compound names into effect, Jehovah Nissi, verse 15. Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. God put on display that he's their conquering hero and their victor against the satanic policy against them. Not only do they have a spiritual unfitness to go into that land and function automatically as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, but they have no capacity to deal with the adversary who's against them. And that was put on display by Amalek coming out. And they need Jehovah Nissi. The Lord swore he'd have. Notice it says, because verse 16, this is why he called it that, for he said, because the Lord has sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. The Lord will deal with Amalek from generation to generation. But they're going to do their darndest to do it. And it won't be until they cast themselves upon God's Jehovahness, as far as Jehovah Nissi is concerned, out there in the time of Jacob's trouble, that they really let him fulfill what he says right here. That they step out of the way, throw their armaments down, so being that you got to do it. And he returns at that as Jehovah Nissi. Anyway, and the fifth trial is all chapter 18. there and their influence upon the Gentiles, and that they are by nature unfit to make that impact upon the Gentiles once they get into that land. But anyway, come over to chapter 19 now. Five trials for their education, they now come to Mount Sinai. Verse 1, chapter 19. In the third month, when the children of Israel are gone forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day came they into the wilderness of Sinai. For they were departed from Rephidim, and were come to the desert of Sinai, and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel camped before the mountain. God brought them there. And then it says, Moses went up unto God. He's there in the mount. And the Lord called him out of the mountain, and he said some things. And we'll look at that in just a moment here, but keep everything in perspective here and the background to it all. They've just gone through the five trials for their fundamental education. And this aspect of God's Jehovahness, he's put on display that they are spiritually unfit to go into that land and automatically function as that kingdom of priests and that holy nation. He's already demonstrated to them their inability to perform and keep his statutes, to keep his judgments and so forth. That would make him by nature therefore treat them differently than anybody else. And would match their thinking therefore about themselves, that they are different by nature from anybody else. And if they've learned what they ought to have learned when they got here, they ought to have seen we are no different than anybody else. The only reason why we are who we are is because of God. And he's put his love on us, as Moses tells them later on. And if we're ever going to be in that land we're heading to, that kingdom of priests and that holy nation, if we're ever going to fulfill the design and purpose God has set forth in the covenant he made with our father Abraham, then we need God by his Jehovahness, as his name I Am blank says. We need him to do for us things we can't do for ourselves. And for him by his grace to give them to us. Now there at Mount Sinai there, God calls Moses up to the mount there. Moses goes up and God sends Moses down with a message. And the issue primarily is that very thing. You've seen me do this. And you know who you are. Now, do you want to continue on the basis that I began educating you with, keeping diligent in my commandments and so forth, to be that holy nation, that kingdom of priests? Or what? Look at it. Exodus chapter 19, verse 3. And Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him. Moses goes up unto God, and the Lord calls unto him. Jehovah calls unto him out of that mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. You've seen what I did. You've seen my Jehovahness in effect for you. And I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my... Now once again, keep in mind, this is not the first time they've been confronted with the issue of diligently keeping, hearing his voice and keeping his commands and everything. He started their education with that issue. You think you can do it? I'm going to prove you right now and show you. And I've already said to you, how long refuse ye to do it? Now, have you learned the lesson? Now therefore, if ye will keep my voice indeed and keep my... Obey my voice indeed, excuse me, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. Now once again, if the lesson's been learned, to put it in my own crude way, when Moses comes along and tells them this, when it says, And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. By the way, note exactly what that says there in verse 7. It says, Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded him. Now, you lay something before someone's face, you expect them to see something. You lay it before them. They're gonna look at it and they're gonna know what this thing entails. The issue of... The issue's clear. The option's clear. And in view of that, like I said in my own crude way, the answer, the appropriate answer would have been, no, we can't do this. We've just demonstrated we can't do this. Go back up and tell him for his name's sake, receive us graciously. Hold your place here in Exodus chapter 19. Come to me, if you would, to Hosea chapter 13. The very thing that Israel should have said at this time, they will say out there. Hosea chapter 13. We don't have time to go down through this passage, although it is one of the more concise and packed doctrinal passages to Israel about the issue of when they finally learn the lesson of his Jehovah's and grace. When they reject it here, what they're doing at Mount Sinai, as we'll see in just a few moments and everything, they have to learn the hard way throughout their history the issue of his Jehovah's and grace, which they spurned back here. And it's when their backs are against the wall up here, and there's no strength remaineth in them, as Deuteronomy 32, the song Moses talks about in that day, that they say what is recorded here. But before you look at what it says in the first two verses of chapter 14, in chapter 13, look it up in verse 5 of chapter 13. Actually, it would be great if we could back up even further than that, but we... Verse 5, the Lord speaking, I did know thee in the wilderness, in the land of great drought. According to their pasture, so were they filled. They were filled, and their heart was exalted. Therefore have they forgotten... See, they took it wrong. They took it wrong back here. God's doing all this because of who we are. No, he's not. He's showing he's doing all this in spite of who you are. Their heart was exalted. Therefore they have forgotten me. By the way, process starting. We just haven't got time. So many things like that. But a process started that laid the track for Israel's history. And it's, anyway... Therefore I will be unto them as a lion, that's what the law contract called for. As a leopard by the way will I observe them. I will meet them as a bear that is bereaved of her whelps, and will rend the call of their heart. And there will I devour them like a lion, the wild beast shall tear them. That's what they're going to go through, that fifth course of punishment, the zenith of it's out there. Fifth and final installment, day of the Lord's wrath. Now look at verse 9 in connection with this. O Israel, thou hast destroyed thyself. That's what you do, by the way, under the law contract. That's what it's designed to do. The law contract is designed to destroy you. The reason why, because it's based totally on your own performance, and your own performance in the eyes of God's holiness, righteousness, and justice demands destruction. The strength of sin is the law, and the motions of sin which are by the law, a destruction process goes on. And if it isn't halted by a change of mind that appeals to and accepts God's Jehovah's and grace and what he's done for you by Jehovah's and grace, then the destruction process of sin continues on. You end up in the lake of fire where their worm dieth not. And the soul and spirit erodes. Anyway. O Israel, thou hast destroyed thyself. Look at that next line, verse 9. But in me is thine help. I am whatever you need me to be. And he starts listing them now. Verse 10, I will be thy king. And as you start going on down to the passage here, he takes those five mandates of the Davidic covenant that cover all seven Jehovah compound names, and he says, I'll be it for you. I'll be thy king. Come on down to verse 12, the iniquity of Ephraim is bound up, his sin is hid, the sorrows of a trailing woman shall come upon him. He is an unwise son, for he should not stay long in the place of breaking forth. I will ransom them from the power of the grave. I will, every time you get an I will there, that's his Jehovah's and grace going into effect for them. I'll redeem them from death. O death, I will be thy plague. O grave, I will be thy destruction. Repent shall not be hid from mine eyes. And so forth. Down to verse 4 of chapter 14. I will heal their back. There's Jehovah Rofecker. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for mine anger is turned away from them. I will be as the dew, as their, all their material blessings. I will be as the dew unto Israel. And so forth and so forth. But notice in the midst of all that description of his Jehovah's and grace being put into effect of that historically out there through the Messiah coming, Adonai Jehovah, enfleshing himself, the Lion of the Seed of David, functioning as their Redeemer, their Deliverer, their Avenger, their King, and their Blesser. Notice the first two verses of chapter 14 in the midst of that. O Israel. You got two appeals to them. O Israel. Realize you've destroyed yourself under this law contract. I'll be your help, though. And the issue is, when I start functioning, here's what you need to do. O Israel, return unto the capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, thy God. Return to Jehovah thy God. For thou hast fallen by thine iniquity, which is what the law contract manifested. Take with you words. And turn to the Lord, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. The very thing they should have done when they sent Moses back up Mount Sinai there was to take with them, sent him up with the words, not all that the Lord has spoken we will do, but these words, and say unto him, these are the words Jehovah's been waiting to hear out of Israel's mouth. Take away all iniquity and receive us, what? Graciously. So, when you do that, will we render the calves of our lips? That's when we'll render something to you that you can accept. Only when you, by your Jehovah's and grace, take away all iniquity and receive us graciously. Those are the words. Look at verse 8, Exodus chapter 19. All the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. Those aren't the words they should have sent back to the Lord. But they failed to learn the lesson, and the Lord explained what they did back there in Hosea, over there in Hosea 13. I dealt with you in the land of great drought and all that, blah, 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 and your heart was exalted. You know what happened to them? Pretty much the very same thing that happened to the first sinner in the universe. Lucifer. His heart was exalted as well. Anyway, those aren't the words they should have brought up if they had learned the lesson. They didn't learn the lesson, and so they said, we'll take the law contract. We'll have you deal with us on the basis of our performance. And that, folks, was a spurning and a scorning and a rejecting of God's Jehovah's and grace. And God let them know that in no uncertain terms, because the moment those words were returned to the Lord's whole attitude and demeanor changed. Verse 9. And the Lord said unto Moses, lo, I come unto thee in a thick cloud. that the people may hear when I speak with thee and believe thee forever. And Moses told the words of the people unto the Lord. And the Lord said to Moses, Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes. Well, hold on here a minute. Aren't we okay already? You didn't learn, did you? Sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready against the third day. For the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. Well, that's good news. We'll be able to get together with you and go to the... Oh, wait a minute. And thou shalt set bounds unto the people round about, saying, Take heed to yourselves, that ye go not up into the mount, or touch the border of it. Whosoever toucheth the mount shall surely be put to death. There shall not a hand touch it, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through. Whether it be a beast or man, it shall not live. When the trumpet soundeth long, they shall come up to the mount. Holy smokes. This isn't how he's acted with them before. That's because he dealt with them in their ignorance and was educating them in his Jehovahness and grace. Now it's been laid before their faces plainly and clearly, and they've rejected his Jehovahness, they've rejected his grace, their heart was exalted. They said in their heart, we're equal to you. We got natural right and natural holiness. We can do what you've said, and we'll show you. And that's what an exalted heart says. And so instead of saying, take away all iniquity that we've seen manifest in us and receive us graciously, they say, we don't see any iniquity in us. We can meet you on your own terms. God sends Moses down. He says, I'm going to come down. But I'm not like you and you're not like me. You put a fence and bounds around this thing, and don't you let anybody come near this mountain until I tell them to come. And if when they come, they better not even touch this mountain, and they better not cross those bounds, because I'll kill them. That's what you get when you're dealt with by God on the basis of what you merit. You merit death by nature. A child of Adam merits death by nature. And Israel has chosen to be dealt with on who they are by nature, misinterpreting who they are by nature, misinterpreting it because they rejected the education of his Jehovah's and grace. And with an exalted heart, thought that they were and persisted in their belief that they were naturally fit to go into that land and be that kingdom of priests and that holy nation. And they are not. Now what this law covenant does, folks. Well, let's take a few moments here. And read on down through, whether we cover all the details or not, we won't. But let's just get the gist of this in Exodus chapter 19 here. Under the law contract now, they begin to get educated in the fear and the dread of Almighty God. They've chosen to be dealt with on the basis of their merits and think in their exalted heart they are equal to by nature. And they've got a natural spiritual fitness for access with Him. Verse 14, And Moses went down from the mount unto the people and sanctified the people, and they washed their clothes. And he said unto the people, Be ready against the third day, come not at your wives. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voice of the trumpet exceeding loud, so that all the people that was in the camp trembled. And that's exactly what they were supposed to do. And that's exactly what this impact was designed to produce. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the nether part of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in a fire. And the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. you've got a scene here of consuming fire and wrath. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and waxed louder and louder, Moses spake, and God answered him by a voice. And the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai, on the top of the mount. And the Lord called Moses up to the top of the mount. Moses went up. And the Lord said unto Moses, go down. I love this part. Moses goes up, and the Lord says, go back down. Charge the people, lest they break through unto the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves, lest the Lord break forth upon them. And Moses said to the Lord, thy people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou chargest them, saying, set bounds unto the mount and sanctify it. And the Lord said to them, away, get thee down. The Lord's already demonstrated to them, how long refuse you to keep my commandments? He just gave them a command, don't come near, don't go across the bound, everything. What's a naturally rebellious sinner going to do? Was God unnatural here and too cautious here, thinking that they might break through unto the Lord to gaze and many of them perish? No! He knew that's the very thing their rebellious heart would do. And with a heart exalted and everything, they think we got the right to go in there. There's no way he'd do it. Away, Moses, get thee down, and thou shalt come up, thou and Aaron with thee. But let not the priests and the people break through to come up unto the Lord, lest he break forth unto them, or upon them. So Moses went down unto the people and spake unto them, and told them, don't you come near this place. We've never dealt with our God like this before. You know the passage over in Hebrews chapter 12. Moses, I exceedingly fear and quake. And you read on further descriptions about it and everything. When you go over to Deuteronomy, Moses reminds him of what took place and everything like that. Moses comes along and tells them that by all rights, from the moment they signed that law contract and God came down on Mount Sinai, from by all rights, God had the right to wipe them all out and just consume them. But they heard the Lord speaking out of the fire and did live. There's only one way they did that. And it's the same way that they continued to live even when Moses came down, the golden calf incident took place and everything. God reserved himself the right to put his Jehovah's and grace into practice for them even though they rejected it. And in so doing, he laid the foundation for that, for a new covenant. That's why when he told Moses, you come down, you take those stones and you put them in that ark, that coffin. Because this contract is a dead issue between me and you. And he's going to deal with them. He'll constantly put on display the issue of his Jehovah's and grace throughout and be merciful to them even though that contract doesn't call for it. Because that's their hope. That's their only hope of even continuing in existence. And he will make a new covenant that will put his that will be based upon his Jehovah's and grace being put into effect for them, and he will give them by his grace the spiritual fitness that they need. But the issue is, by signing this law contract, they're actually contracting to perform on their own and by their own works make themselves spiritually fit, or prove themselves to be spiritually fit. We have to make some further progress here and start bringing us all this, though hours more could be said on the development issues here, but we need to bring this now to a concise package that we can identify as the education we need to have about the old contract, the old covenant, the law covenant, so we can see what the new covenant and everything is all about and appreciate it in all its glory. Now, come with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 6, and at the same time get Leviticus chapter 18 in your hand. Deuteronomy chapter 6 and Leviticus chapter 18. Let me get these two places at the exact same time here. Save some time. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 6 and Leviticus chapter 18. I mentioned to you already that when Moses goes through all the components of Israel's natural spiritual unfitness and deals with them all, they can all be categorized, lined up, listed under two major headings. There's two major categories to Israel's natural unfitness, which really come down to two major categories to any son of Adam's natural unfitness to be utilized by God in any manner or form that he would choose. These two categories of natural unfitness, let me put it up there like this. No correlation to the timeline. I'm just using this for the whiteboard. Natural, well, get this up here. We'll call it natural spiritual unfitness. That's really what we're dealing with. Natural spiritual unfitness. Two categories. One, two. Deuteronomy chapter, well, let me list them first and we'll look at the things here. First category is an individual is naturally unrighteous. I'm having trouble spelling here. Naturally unrighteous and naturally unholy. That's what every son of Adam possesses by nature, that makes him naturally, spiritually unfit to be utilized by God in any plan and purpose God would choose to utilize him in. A son of Adam is unrighteous by nature and is unholy by nature. And that means he is naturally, spiritually unfit. He has a natural, spiritual unfitness of those two categorical types, unrighteousness, unholiness. This law contract that Israel signed with God, contracted for them on the base of their own performance of keeping his commandments diligently, obeying his voice and his statutes and judges, all this business, to merit or prove natural righteousness and to merit or prove natural holiness. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 20, let's take verse 24 and verse 25. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. And it shall be our righteousness, if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God as he hath commanded us. Moses, if we can do all this, we'll merit righteousness or prove that we are not unrighteous by nature, but we are naturally righteous. What he's talking about there is the issue of justification. Self-justification, actually. Israel was educated in natural spiritual unfitness. The five trials for their education were designed to teach them fundamentally they were naturally unrighteous, naturally unholy. They were not naturally righteous, naturally holy. They did not possess natural justification and natural sanctification before God's eyes. They thought they did. Their exalted hearts persisted in believing they did, or they could prove they did, or they could merit it, produce it, perform it. And that's what that law contract is really all about in its most fundamental sense. There's a lot to the law contract. We're just dealing with the fundamental issues in it in response to the issue of God's Jehovah's and grace education that he gave Israel. And what they do, therefore, in this law contract, in essence, they opt. By choosing that law contract, Israel opts to justify and sanctify themselves. And here in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 25, in view of the truth of the fact that they are naturally spiritually unfit, possessing natural unrighteousness, the issue was to produce self-justification. I realize that's small, but I'm talking about it as I write it. You can't read what I write anyway, so that's why I tell you what I'm writing. The law contracts for an Israelite to produce self-justification. Come back to Leviticus chapter 18. Justification, of course, is justification unto life. And that's why it says here, that the verse is so often quoted by the Apostle Paul when he deals with what the law contract fundamentally set forth, self-justification. Verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am the Lord your God, after the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. After the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments, and walk and keep my commandments, to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord. Which if a man do, he shall live in justification unto eternal life. The law contract, once again, covenants for Israel to make themselves spiritually fit to be utilized by God in his plan and purpose if they can keep the law's performance standards perfectly. If they can do that, they will justify themselves and take care of the unrighteousness issue, but they will also sanctify themselves and take care of the unholiness issue. You hear in Leviticus, come over to back of chapter 11. Leviticus chapter 11. And look with me, if you would, at verses 44 and verse 45. Leviticus chapter 11, verse 44. For I am the Lord your God, ye shall therefore sanctify yourselves, and ye shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall ye defile yourselves in any manner of creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. For I am the Lord that brought you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. Ye shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. There's various aspects of that holiness that he deals with, whether it's a physical issue and so forth there. But the issue is you shall sanctify yourselves. That's what you said you were. With your exalted heart and everything, now do it. Come over to chapter 19 here in Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 19. Look at verse 2. Verse 1 and 2. And Moses, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say to them, ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. And he deals another category of manifesting their sanctification, if they've really got it. And look at chapter 20 here, in verses 7 and verse 8 in particular. Sanctify yourselves, therefore, and be ye holy, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my statutes and do them. I am the Lord which sanctifieth you. Or which sanctifieth, pardon me, you. Their natural spiritual unfitness that they refused to recognize and believe was the case has two categories to it. They're unrighteous by nature, and they're unholy by nature, just as any son of Adam is. They refused to learn the lesson of that when God taught them the reality of it, when he went through the issues of his Jehovah's and grace and proved what was in their heart and so forth. They opt for the law contract, and by the law contract they opt therefore from their exalted heart to either prove that they really are naturally righteous and naturally holy, or to self-justify and self-sanctify themselves. Self-sanctification. And if they can self-justify or self-sanctify themselves, or prove that they have natural righteousness and natural holiness by nature, then they merit and prove their spiritual fitness to go into that land and be the holy nation and kingdom of priests God's plan and purpose called for them to be. You know, folks, when you really think about it, the law contract, covenants for Israel to try and change their natural identity on their own, to do it by their own works. They refuse to believe that they possess the same nature as any old son of Adam. But they do. And really what they're trying to do is to prove that they are not in Adam. Now that goes beyond really what needs to be said in connection with all this. But it's the truth nevertheless. Now, let me take a quick look at how much time we got here. We only got about 8 or 9 minutes left here to this lesson. That's what the law contract is all about. I shouldn't say all about. That's what fundamentally about. There are other issues associated with it that build upon that and that take other matters into account and everything. But when it comes to the fundamental issue of Israel being fit to be utilized by God in His plan and purpose, be able to go into that land and be that kingdom of priests and that holy nation, the law contract, covenants for them on the basis of their own performance to merit that spiritual fitness, to provide for it on their own, either by proving they already had it or by meriting it and performing and working it up and producing it and presenting it to God. Now, you know that they couldn't do it and that they didn't do it. And you know that what God originally educated them in was true. That they are spiritually unfit by nature. And what they are by nature is unrighteous and unholy. And they do need justification and sanctification. But it's not going to come from self. It's going to come from Jehovah. And by His grace, they need Him to give it to them. They need Him, by His Jehovahness, to take care of their unrighteousness, to take care of their unholiness. They need Him, by His Jehovahness, to take away all iniquity, which makes them unrighteous and makes them unholy, and to receive them graciously. And therefore to give them, by His Jehovahness and grace, justification and sanctification. And when they've got justification and they've got sanctification, then they are spiritually, and only then, they are spiritually fit to be utilized by God in His plan and purpose. Then, being justified and sanctified and being justified and sanctified by the gift of God's grace, then they can go into that land and be the holy nation and be the kingdom of priests. Then they can dwell in a land that has God on a throne. Well, it's gone off the board there now. And they can dwell in the kingdom of heaven on this earth. Then they can have all those blessings and all that prosperity rightfully theirs and inherit it rightfully. But until they are spiritually fit, none of those things can be possessed by them. What I'm saying to you and putting it that way is Israel needs the spiritual fitness in order to be able to be what God plans and purpose for them to be in what is set forth in the Abrahamic covenant, the Davidic covenant, the covenant of peace, etc. Now, We're going to stop it about a couple minutes short here than the normal hour cutoff point, because that's an appropriate place to stop. In our next lesson, lesson number 5, we will go over the reality of them being unable to make themselves spiritually fit, and not only the fact that the law declares that to them, but that the law declares to anyone who tries to put themselves underneath it that they are spiritually unfit by nature, and that if they are ever going to be made fit to be utilized by anything in God's plan and purpose, they need God by His Jehovah's and grace to give them justification and sanctification as an absolutely free gift. And then, having seen that, we'll see the provision once again within the law contract and the connection with it that God made for the need for a new covenant. And then we're ready to look at the fact that it is the new covenant that, on the base of God's Jehovahness and grace being put into effect to take care of unrighteousness and unholiness, does so. And the new covenant is a grace covenant in which God gives righteousness, justification, holiness, sanctification unto the beneficiary of it, and in so doing makes the beneficiary fit to be utilized by Him in His plan and purpose, whatever that plan and purpose is, including His plan and purpose for us in the dispensation of grace. Okay, those will be the kind of things we'll be looking at in the next lesson, and maybe even into lesson number 6. But once that's all done, and we've got an appreciation for what the new covenant's all about, then we can begin to examine the new covenant and look at the spiritual benefits of it. See the reality of us in this dispensation of grace being beneficiaries of it, and once that's all done, then communion can be appropriately and properly handled, understood, appreciated, and partaken of. Much more yet to do, but until next time.